I'm not going to tell you because I just did. Hit the record button, that is. This is Sheila Q on DH Radio at CJMQ 88.9 FM. And that terrified voice in the background would be that of Frank. Now, is it Verpalest?
It's pronounced. No, this is funny.
Okay, because I'm like, you have a name that made me go, hmm.
My ex-wife had the perfect way of pronouncing my family name. And it was like an animal has fur paws.
Right.
My name is pronounced Verpaws.
Verpaws. Amazing.
The L and the T are silent.
Wow. Just throw in two silent letters, Frank.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
My ex-wife got right.
Oh! Oh! Oh, the scorch. The burn. The burn. All right. Well, you know what? There were several reasons that made me decide to learn more about your story when I heard a snippet of it. Mm-hmm. That was basically that it was this amazing mashup of stuff. I thought, wow, I think this is a guy who's as busy as my boyfriend are and I are, you know, like where we're always on the go constantly and involved in all kinds of different things and just love it that way. Now you're into blogging and podcasting and music and wait, now give me a list of the instruments that you play.
Well, I play Irish whistles of various sizes, up to and including the largest one that you might have seen in musicals like Riverdance.
Yeah.
They call it the low D whistle, which sounds like a flute,
mm-hmm.
but it's basically a six-holed flute front, you know, like a recorder style, but with only six holes. They call it an Irish whistle. And you get them in different scales, like you buy harmonicas in the scale of D, the scale of C, G sharp, because with only six holes, you have a limited number of notes that you can play.
Okay.
In different combinations to make the sharps and the flats and whatnot. So you have a full range of sizes, so you can play different scales, different tunes, right?
Yeah.
I also play the B-flat clarinet, which I learned in high school.
At Alexander Galt?
Yeah. Yes, 4 years of music with the wonderful Mr. Pele.
There you go.
Yeah, he was amazing. terrorized us in class, but then come concert night was an angel. Right? Very, very motivating, very uplifting, and he was amazing. He's one of the reasons why I think I'm still involved in music in my own way. I also play something called the hammer dulcimer.
Yeah, okay, explain this to me.
Well, it's kind of, it is the cousin of the piano.
Okay.
It's a big sound box, kind of like a rectangle with the top corners kind of angled in.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise known as a trapezoid.
Yeah.
It has two bridges on the top.
Mm-hmm.
With strings running across both sides.
Okay.
And you play it more or less like a xylophone. You have two little mallets, and you hit the strings.
How did you come to decide to play the hammer dulcimer? Like, was that...
I don't think I decided to. I think it decided to pick me.
Okay.
I was down in the United States at a medieval fair, and I was involved in that kind of group of things back in the 80s, late 80s. I went to the States, was at a medieval fair, and medieval / Renaissance
mm-hmm.
fair. And there were a lot of merchants. They called them merchants, you know, ye merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a hammer dulcimer, and he was playing it. And I said, I have to try this. And at that point in time, I was already playing music for the medieval and Renaissance dancers on my recorders. And so I sat down, and I played a tune pretty much the first time I sat down. Cause I play by ear.
Okay.
So I can listen to a riff and learn it without having the sheet music in front of me.
Well,
and so I just sat down, and I played a tune. I transposed the tune in my head, and I figured out the scale I was working on, and I played a tune. And the owner of the store, the merchant, said, wow, have you ever played before? And I said, no. And he goes, oh. And right then and there, I decided to buy one at the time.
My
and
goodness.
Brought it home with me to Montreal.
That's amazing. Like, the idea of something that's such an unusual instrument to begin with, to be able to sit down and have an idea about what you should be doing with it. That's kind of, pretty crazy cool.
I've always wanted to play a stringed instrument, but my fingers, I have a type of dwarfism, and my hands are quite large. I wear, a size 20 ring or something ridiculous.
Holy
like
Toledo,
that. No, 12,
really?
12.
Okay.
12 is the biggest size I think you can get in a jewelry store without getting it custom made.
Yeah.
Actually, no, mine was custom made. So, yeah, I'm at the limit for the width of the finger.
Wow.
But they're very kind of short, right?
Yeah.
And the third knuckle is fused so that when I make a fist, it looks more like a karate-style fist rather than a flat boxing type fist.
Is that must be a challenge. I'm impressed that you play wind instruments in that case too.
That's an interesting quick story in and of itself. When I was a kid, the doctors knew I might have limitations with my dexterity.
So
they had me doing exercises constantly from the age of 4 years old and up.
Okay.
You know, till I was like 10 or 11, where I would have to bring my thumb to my pinky and do 10 repetitions, then my thumb to my ring finger, 10 repetitions, my thumb to my middle finger, right?
Yeah.
Over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And they encouraged me to do that, to do exercises for dexterity. So when I hit high school, I went into music and typing in my first year of high school.
Oh, my goodness.
So when you say challenge, to me, it's like second nature. It was never a challenge.
Isn't that interesting? The whole, I guess it winds up being that sometimes some of the things that we're made to learn or practice or do that you wouldn't necessarily make the connection right away can come in ridiculously handy or develop a skill,
you know,
without realizing that that's what it's leading to, you know?
Well, in the back of my mind, I thought, do I want to do these stupid exercises or do I want to learn to type and play music?
Yeah.
Well, I knew what I wanted to do. Learn to type and play music.
So now, with dwarfism and the given around the time you would have been born, it would have been a situation where your parents learned when you were born, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm the baby
of
six.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah. So my oldest siblings were born in the early 50s.
Okay.
Right. I'm 48. God, I had to think about that for a second. I don't think about age.
Nope, gotcha.
I'm 48 now. The oldest is going to hit 60 this year. Oh, no, he hit 60 last fall.
My goodness.
Turning 61 this fall. So he was born with dwarfism. There are three of us in our family that were and three of us that were not.
Okay.
Because it's a recessive gene.
Now, what would that have been like at that time? Like even today, imagine the challenges of like so many things that I'm sure even just in a household that we would not think about being challenging. Yeah. What was that like for you guys?
Well, for me, I was the baby of the family, so I was old news as far as the dwarf news goes. You know, oh, another dwarf. Okay, we know the drill. But for my mother and my first brother, I'll tell you what happened. They went from Sherbrooke to St. Justin's Hospital here in Montreal, and the doctors basically said, a dwarf? Actually, I don't even think they knew what it was.
Really?
Right? I don't know if they gave it a name.
My goodness.
What they told my mother was, go to Boston's Children's Hospital. They'll know what to do. So basically, they did next to nothing for my family.
They're like shipping you around.
Yeah. So basically, in the early 60s, come 1964, 65, when I was about a year old, my Francophone family transplanted itself to Pawtucket, Rhode Island, about an hour south of Boston's Children's Hospital. I mean, it wasn't just for that reason. My dad worked in textiles.
Mm-hmm.
And there was better money to chase down in the States in New England,
mm-hmm.
if you know anything about New England history, there was a strong French presence.
Oh my goodness, yes, and right. the remnants, especially particularly in the last names.
The Roys, the Gagneys, and the Gagnons,
and the Belangers, and the Boulangers, yeah. and the Tremblays,
and the Pelletiers.
Exactly.
My sister married a Pelletier.
Did she?
And his grandmother was French from Quebec.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah, so it was two reasons my dad transplanted us. One, for the money, and two, because the doctors kept telling them, look, you know, for best results, go to Boston's Children.
My goodness.
That's what they did.
Wow. So for three, now, so your older siblings, are all three of you, like, what's the order of the children in the family, boys and girls?
One in the middle is the boy, 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 girl, boy, boy.
Oh, boy.
And by order of dwarf and not, it was dwarf, tall, tall, dwarf, tall, dwarf.
I sort of want to figure out, see, now I sort of want to have some kind of thing to say like that about my family, other than girl, boy, boy, you know? So yeah. Boring.
And it was 6.5 years between me and the next youngest.
Oh, boy. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
So wow.
They took their time to, you know, but I asked my mother a long time ago, and I was not an accident. They really wanted to have another child.
You were loved and wanted, and that's the yeah. best thing that a person can be.
Absolutely.
Well, it doesn't seem to be something that stopped you or your family, for that matter, in spite of the fact that it would have been at a time when there was probably a whole lot less awareness or tolerance about any kind of special needs, for, you know, no matter what situation yeah. you're looking at, what, be it physical or intellectual or mental or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, both my parents were pretty down-to-earth people, hardworking. They were both born and raised on a farm, and that meant everybody has a job to do.
Right on.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that was the rule of the household is, I'm sorry, yes, we know you just came out of the hospital, but you still have to dry the dishes.
That's so great.
If you can sit up on the stool, you're drying the dishes.
We'll hand them to you.
So, and that was the rule of the household, basically. And as we grew up, the rule became go to school or pay rent.
Ah,
and
yeah.
that was across the board, be you disabled, hospitalized. Well, I mean, if you're in a hospital, of course, there was a grace period. but it was go to school or work
and
generate revenue for the family.
So what did you end up deciding to do?
Both. At the age of 16, I was between high school and college, I was doing bookkeeping. For an accountant who did taxes every season.
Now, tell me about how you have, because just your spirit is so awesome, and like there's such a great presence and sense of humor about you. I'm sure at times it can't have been easy, but it doesn't seem to have kept you down either. So give me an idea about life of Frank.
Life of Frank was hard knocks early on in life. I didn't begin to blossom until I was in middle of high school.
What would you say made the difference?
Well, it's hard. Not having to go to the hospital every frickin' summer was one.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like from the age of, I had some surgery on my heels to prevent pigeon toes,
mm-hmm.
right, from my feet from turning inwards. They did mm-hmm. operations on me when I was a baby, like a couple of months old, and then again when I was around 2 years old at Boston's Children. Then more surgeries on my hips from the age of 8, 9, 10, a little pause, and then a couple more when I was 14, 15, and then the last one was on my back when I was 17. And I have not had surgery since, so that's a good 30 years.
That's amazing!
Yeah.
Wow. Now, did that mostly have to do with the fact that they tend to do those surgeries while the person's body is growing?
In fact, they usually don't do the kinds of surgeries on children that are still growing at that age.
Really?
I'm one of the youngest patients to ever have a hip replacement, if not the youngest.
How old did you say?
I was 16.
Whoa, yeah.
But they figured since I would not grow as much as your average 16-year-old, they took a chance. Because my right hip was totally immobilized. My type of
like
dwarfism...
Like fused, sort of?
Pardon?
Was it like something was fused?
Yeah, because the... My type of dwarfism brings along a certain amount of unevenness in my joints.
Okay.
So the cartilage wears out prematurely, so I have osteoarthritis. And in some cases, when the unevenness or deformity, I don't even want to use the word deformity, but I guess that's the best word I can use. The deformity is so severe that the joint locks up, seizes up, can't move at a certain point. And so the only thing they can do is basically lop off the head of the femur, put in a titanium femur pin, goes in the femur, and the titanium ball attached to the, right? Because it's a ball and socket joint.
Yep.
And then sand, smooth out the socket, and insert some kind of vinyl lining, and then reattach them.
Vinyl and titanium? Do you know how cool that is? Okay.
Yeah,
you know, they're
exactly.
two of my favorite things.
Exactly.
Now a part of your actual skeleton.
We can rebuild them.
Yeah.
And the other operation was a partial spinal fusion where they take some titanium rods. So
okay.
I had scoliosis, which is curvature of the spine. And the curve was pushing too much towards the heart. It was a 70-degree curve, which is pretty acute. And so they decided that they wanted to straighten it out because back braces weren't doing the trick. So they take these titanium rods, they attach the top and bottoms to the vertebrae above and below the curvature, and then they lengthen the titanium rods after they've been attached.
Oh.
Of course, you're asleep when they do it.
Yeah, well, you
all
should.
All internal.
I was just going to say, like, you and Wolverine, like, you know, I think you may have to meet Hugh Jackman one day, and he's going to high-five you.
Exactly.
Okay?
Because
if you tell me you have adamantium claws, then we really have to start talking.
I grew an inch and a half.
Overnight.
Overnight. Seriously.
That's
when
amazing.
I got out of bed, like, before surgery, my eyes were slightly below the nurse's desk level.
Yeah.
Right, the command central station.
Gotcha.
And then after the surgery, my nose was poking above the counter. And I'm like, holy crap. Can I say crap on radio?
Crap's fine.
And I was like, I grew. And when I asked my doctor, he said, yeah, you grew about 4 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's just wild.
And since then, no more back braces and little or few back aches of any kind since. And they straightened it out by about 30 degrees.
My goodness.
So that relieved pressure from the heart and the left lung.
Wow.
And that's the last surgery I had many moons ago.
Having had so many surgeries in, like, over your life for so many years, it must be something to imagine that it's been that long that you've been able to.
It's hard
to
imagine what it's like to go back in, but believe me, I haven't forgotten.
No, it must be something that is unforgettable.
I know my right hip will have to be replaced eventually, but I'm pushing it as long as it takes.
So now tell me about there's so much has happened in the last, like, so in the last 30 years, man.
I got married, I got divorced. moved to British Columbia, lived up north in the wilds of Prince George.
What made you go to Prince George?
My ex-wife.
Okay.
It was a mutual decision. We were living in Montreal, and she wanted to do the woman running with wolves thing. And I figured, you know, why not? Let's try something new. And we moved out there. We were supposed to live near Vancouver, but her grandparents, where we were supposed to live with, decided to leave Vancouver and move into the interior to Kelowna.
Okay.
And Kelowna had no jobs.
Oh boy.
Kelowna is farm country.
Right.
And retirement country.
neither of which you were really interested
it
in.
It sits on Lake Okanagan, and the local joke of, do you know how to leave the Okanagan Valley a millionaire? Show up with 10 million and leave with one.
Oh, gotcha.
So we looked for work for a few months and found nothing. And when money started running out, because the grandparents were nice to let us live there, but, you know, we still had a van to pay for and, you know, all of those things. And so we decided to take a pin, a thumbtack, and look on the map and say, this is the point where we will go no further north.
Okay.
This is our limit, and it was Prince George. And we drove for 2 weeks, stopping in every freaking town and what they call a city out in those parts, and going into the local employment agencies and looking for work. And we kept going north until we reached our final destination, which we would say where we said we would go no further.
The limit.
And I found a job in 2 days.
I'm sure the universe was just paying attention to that thumbtack.
Well,
it didn't pay attention to anything that was happening between point A and point B. All it saw was point B.
I'm telling you, it was a great experience.
Yeah?
When we left Montreal, we packed everything into our van that we owned and sold everything else off. It was a real liberating experience to just change your life. And actually, at that time, I was still a bit of a shy solo performer. I would perform with groups of people, but I wouldn't perform on my own. And my ex-wife, God bless her, she is a talented singer. She went to all the best schools in Montreal for that. Face, mind, sang in the Montreal Treble Choir, was a gifted singer, but complex. That was the beginning of the end of our relationship once we got to Prince George.
The thumbtack, again!
Didn't make her happy.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
And I, at a certain point, I couldn't take it anymore, and I just started saying no to all of her ideas. Oh, let's go out and live in the remote woods now. No! No, I'm not doing that. I'm not living 45 minutes out of nowhere. And so I put my foot down, and that's when things came to a halt. And the strange thing that happened was we supported each other in our musical pursuits after we separated. She was a singer who was no longer singing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we helped each other through that time. And we began performing. This is so crazy. I couldn't invent this. We started singing together jazz tunes.
Okay.
At a pie shop that was owned by lesbians.
Okay. That's
kind of northern exposure.
I was just thinking.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And that's when I started playing Irish music a lot as well. For some reason, yes. Irish music and jazz, they go hand in hand.
Pie and so on.
And so I lived up there for 4 years. We got divorced, and after 4 years I just realized that I couldn't live out there anymore. It was too remote. If you had a compound fracture, you had to be flown to Vancouver.
Oh my goodness.
So all the factory workers, you know, if they hurt themselves seriously on the job, or if granny fell and broke her hip, she'd get flown to Vancouver.
Wow, that's insane.
When I started hearing these stories, I said, you know, I have orthopedic needs. I don't want to have to fly to Vancouver every time.
Yeah, no.
So I quit my job, and I worked with a great bunch of people out there, but I had to leave. And I came back to Montreal, and I picked up my old job.
Really?
Yeah, they did an interview over the phone. I talked to the president. They asked me who I was, and I knew the guy. He had been a programmer before, when I was working as a software tester, and we did an interview over the phone, and they said, okay, yeah, we're interested. Let's have you back.
So there's another part of this. So you got this software background as well, too. I love the eclecticness of your life, Frank.
Crazy. And I haven't told you all of it. Right before we finish, I'll give you a list of a few other things that I'll pop your top, I think.
Okay, I want to know now.
Okay, so...
I braced myself. Go.
While I was at Champlain, I was photo editor of the Bishop's University newspaper.
Okay, the campus? No, which one would it have been at that time? Something like that.
I can't remember now. Okay. It's been so long, but basically, the editor who I know, who's now a writer today... And I won't say her name because I don't think I have her permission to say so. But okay. Anyway, I'm sure she knows who she is if she hears this interview. But I thank her for the opportunity. She said, "Well, I don't trust anybody else, so can you be my photo editor?" I'm like, "I'm a Champlain student. I'm not a Bishop student." She goes, "I don't care." So I was photo editor of the Bishop's University newspaper. I was a DJ at Radio Bishop's.
Yeah. Which is now us, CJMQ, is now community radio.
Yeah, and here's something really funny. I was there in the last few years when we were trying to get the cable license.
Oh my goodness, really?
Uh-huh, and I was a DJ, and I was the sales guy for the advertising.
Oh, right on.
Because the CRTC wants you to prove that you're viable.
Yep.
So I would go to Carrefour de l'Estrie and sell advertising.
My goodness.
Then I'd run back to Bishop's Radio, and with a few of my buddies, we'd actually make some commercials.
Produce the ads. Nice.
And the year I graduated and the year I moved, like, I did only one semester of Bishop's University before I moved to Montreal and started working. The year I left was the year that Bishop's Radio got their CRTC license, cable license. 3 years of blood, sweat, and tears, and I never once had an audience.
Oh, but you know what? Now here we are broadcasting online. So, we're still doing our FM thing, and you got to be a part of that pioneering.
Crazy. Because you know what? I knew the call letters were familiar, but I just couldn't remember that far back.
And there it is.
And I'm like, oh, so now I'm on Bishop's Radio.
Hey, I hear that you're a dad too.
Yes.
Okay, tell me that story.
Well, when I moved back from Prince George, I met an incredible woman, my wife, Bonnie. She's just amazing. She's the love of my life. She's my best friend. We've spent maybe two nights apart in the 13 years we've known each other.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. She's a doctor in psychology. She teaches in college, CEGEP. And she took up the fiddle when she met me because she thought it was fun seeing me play at Hurley's Pub and, all the pubs that I played in at the time.
Yeah.
I used to go to the jam sessions and play with my friends. And she went to Irish music school and took some fiddle lessons and was playing tunes in no time at all. There's a few recordings of her on my website.
There's a great photo of the two of you together.
At our wedding.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was like, look at that. Okay, they never quit. They look at them. They're playing and they're in full wedding regalia there.
I hired an Irish music band to play music and an Irish music teacher to teach, dance teacher to teach the dances.
Yeah.
And I knew half the band from my days of playing and jamming at the pubs.
Yeah.
They all knew I played Irish whistles, but none of them knew that I played the hammer dulcimer. Because you see the size of it on the website picture.
Yeah.
It's almost as wide as it is as I am tall.
It's pretty gigantic.
So I'm not about to carry that thing in. And I'm not about, even if I could, I wouldn't bring it in because I wouldn't want a drunk patron to spill beer on it.
Of course, exactly.
That would be a disaster. So none of them knew I played. And when they saw me playing, I'm like, I played a few tunes. I played a tune I composed for my wife as the entrance march.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a traditional wedding march. It was something that I composed myself. So I played it in so that she could come into the hall. And then afterwards, we did the ceremony, we had the supper, and we played the first slow dance of the evening, because I'm not much of a dancer.
That's so cool.
Me and my wife played the first slow dance of the evening for everybody. And then the musicians took over. The only thing is, they would not release me from the corner. said, where do you think you're going, Frank? Sit yourself down and play us a few tunes, why don't you? And so I played for 3 hours at my own wedding.
That's pretty awesome. So the pitter-patter of little feet followed?
Yeah, well, that was a long journey because this was... We met in 89. And she was in the middle of her studies at university. And actually, I was kind of gun-shy. So the first time she proposed or suggested that we might get married, I said no.
Really?
I wanted to live with her for a little while. Even though I knew this was it, I had been fooled once, so I said to myself, let's take it nice and slow. And after a few years, I would say less than a year, I knew it was time.
Yeah.
But by then, she was in the middle of her master's, then her doctorate studies, then her postdoctorate work, and then it was her first year's teaching in college. And we could never synchronize, because in the beginning she had to teach in the summer, so we couldn't synchronize our honeymoon time at all. So we only got married 4 years ago.
Wow.
So 9 years after we knew we would get married.
You know what, I think that sometimes timing just timing always has a place, right? So if it winds up that it unfolds that way, then so be it.
It just so happened that way, but I was ready, and then she was in the middle of the busiest time of her life, which just, you know, for anyone pursuing a doctorate degree right now, is about 7 years. And so it worked out fine. We had a wonderful, wonderful wedding. We had a supreme honeymoon. Took a train ride to Halifax to the Maritime Fiddle Festival.
Nice!
And it was romantic, it was musical, we had great food, and it was just, you know. And then a year after we got married, we started talking about babies, and a few months after making the decision, we were lucky, and she got pregnant, and we had our little girl, Annika.
Oh my goodness.
Who's turning 3 in July.
So what, tell me about being a dad. What's that like for you?
It's awesome.
Did you have any worries as far as knowing that dwarfism was genetic? Did you have any worries?
None, because my sister had already gone to a genetic consultant. And the way it works is this. Our dwarfism is a recessive gene.
Okay.
Not a dominant
gene. Okay, got it. Got it.
And so... we beat the odds in our family, ha ha. But it's supposed to be only 25% of the kids are supposed to be, you know, affected.
Okay.
Because the scenario is you inherit the gene from either daddy or mommy, in which case you're a carrier, but you're not affected.
Okay.
So that's 50% of the cases. 25% of the cases, they inherit the gene from neither parent, meaning they don't have the gene at all in their system.
So
they're not carriers and they're not affected.
Okay.
25% of the cases, they inherit the gene from both mom and dad, in which case you're affected and you're a carrier at that point.
So tell me about this little girl.
She's full of energy. We knew we were in trouble the night she elbowed mommy 100 times in a row. We were watching TV and we felt it bump, 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 and we started counting. We stopped counting at 100.
Wait, this was before she was born?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
this is in utero.
Gentle bumps, in utero, elbows, or... But it was nonstop.
Oh, my. She just was making sure that you guys knew she was there.
Exactly.
And like, maybe that's a sign of some kind of musical ability, too, a little bit of rhythm. Maybe she's going to be a dancer if dad's not, you know?
She loves music. She can carry a tune already. She's been singing for over a year. She listens to Nicki Yanofsky.
Oh, yeah.
Montreal jazz singer who just turned 17 or
18. Yeah, yeah.
Sang at the Olympics.
She sure did. She sang.
I believe.
We had Stefan Mokyo on the show during the Olympics, the composer of that song.
Oh,
so
cool.
Yeah, yeah. Nikki Yanofsky's she's a rising star. Yeah. That's really cool.
And there's a, like, she's learning the lyrics of all these songs already.
Amazing.
For about a year now. And, you know, the funniest one is where, "I'm an evil girl. Don't you mess around with me."
At three.
At less than three.
Less than three. She's going
she's
to be three.
She's been singing that one for like 6 months.
Oh, my goodness.
She doesn't have perfect pitch yet, but one day when we were practicing music at home, my wife was tuning up her fiddle, and we have an electronic tuner, and so my wife plays the note, and my daughter starts to sing the note. And my wife looks at the tuner, and she goes, "Oh, my God, she's in tune." So my wife tries the next note. Da. And the daughter starts to sing the note, and she was in tune on the second note.
That's awesome.
And about 6 months ago, I had her do something interesting, which was she was singing, she was tapping in the bathtub on a plastic tub. And I thought she was keeping a good beat. So I said, let's show her how to sing a song and tap a beat at the same time with both hands. So I showed her. I started singing, and I started pretending to tap with my hands. And she sang Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star while being able to tap out a beat on her little tub.
Oh, my goodness. That's how it starts.
And I'm like, most adults can't do
that. No, I would become completely disoriented. Right-left brain issues would happen.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's a sign.
It's a hoot. Being a father is a hoot because I don't want to call it experimentation, but I'm doing it all the time.
Yes, it is. I have two boys. I completely get it. I understand.
I'm teaching her classic movie lines.
Uh-oh.
So she goes, I taught her a few weeks ago, "Are you talking to me?" Complete with the pointing at yourself and squinting, you know?
I will admit that I had a very large moment of geekery two nights ago when I overheard my six-year-old, who was watching Ghostbusters, say, "This chick is toast!" I was like, I'm so proud right now, and that is ridiculous. But,
my daughter was on the subway, and she pulled that line on a stranger. She goes, "Are you talking to me?"
That's great. Hey, Frank, you know what?
Yeah.
This has been a total pleasure, and I think, you know what the next thing is? We've got to have you come down and play some music for us in studio.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you think?
That'll be a tall order because we don't have a car.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll figure it out, okay?
Okay.
Either that or we're going to come up and record you guys. We've got to meet, and I've got to have a chance to hear you guys play.
Absolutely. I don't know if my wife will agree because she's kind of recording shy, and she, you know, but I will ask her.
You know what? Let's find out because this was a total, total pleasure.
Hey, she was good enough to play at our wedding with the band. But her problem is over the last 2 years, we're not practicing as much as we used to because of school.
Yeah.
But I will ask her. I will invite her.
You know what? Let's look into that because that would be so much fun.
But I will not exclude her. That's for sure. She's the love of my life, and if she wants to jump aboard, then I'm going to support her and make it, you know, as fun for her as possible. Because not everybody, like, at a certain point, I got rid of my stage fright, and ever since then, there's been no turning back.
But
some other people, it can be more stressful than it's worth.
Absolutely. And you know what? Whether she just decides to be there as moral support or she decides to perform, either way, we will just be delighted to meet her. So,
absolutely. And Annika, too.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
We'll
see what we can do on our side, too, because my mom lives in Sherbrooke.
Amazing.
And I do have to visit her. Because I love... Well, let me rephrase that. I always want to visit her. So,
right on.
She's 84, 83... Sorry, Mom. I can't remember my mom's age all of a sudden.
Well, Frank, no, wait, Verpas?
Verpas.
Verpas. Verpas.
Yeah,
is
Verpas.
That good? All right. I'm going to work on this. I will get it.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. It's been such a blast.
It was a hoot. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for asking the questions. And there's just one thing I want to mention here.
Let's hear it.
My blogging and all the rest is just... Now, I had awesome parents, and not everybody is blessed with awesome parents.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a special message to, you know, people, maybe some kids who are might be listening, teenagers who are maybe struggling or maybe just being shy in life. You know, you guys have all the skills and talents to go out there and just live a life. You don't have to be a superstar. You know, you don't have to be a rock star or a pop star. Just do what you like, do what interests you, and get out there and live. You know, because you're going to have fun doing it. And that's my message.
That is so perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much, Frank.
You're welcome.
All right, take care.
We'll be in touch.
Bye.
Take care, Sheila. Bye-bye.